Hello, hello. I am Catherine Drysdale. I'm here with the Your Pleasure Path podcast. I have my very special guest, Yana Talon Hicks, today. She's a sex therapist specializing in LGBTQ+ kinky and non-monogamous relationships. And we are here to discuss a little bit about her upcoming book, Hot and Unbothered. I'm so excited to have you on today. So before we jump into everything, would you mind sharing a little bit about your story and what got you started in a career within the sexuality space?
Yeah, no matter how many times I answer this question, it's really hard for me to answer it for some reason, because I feel like the true root of my interest in sex education came from just being a sexually active teenager in the early 2000s, which, for those of you who weren't there in the early 2000s, as a teenager, we didn't have smartphones, we didn't have Google, we didn't have TikTok, we didn't have Instagram, we didn't have Facebook. We kind of just like were getting sex ed from school, sort of, kind of, a little bit, maybe, peers, and kind of guess and test methods. So I think for me, I had a really organic interest in like, oh, I feel like socially speaking, everyone's so obsessed with this sex situation, but like, we don't talk about it very well. It's just sort of like happening by accident. I feel like when I heard stories from my friends about who they were having sexual activity with, like, didn't seem very satisfying or like on the same page. And I was just like, what is up? So that kind of started my baby feminist drive to sort of improve the scenario for myself and my peers. And it kind of grew from there as I grew up into a more professional tilt. So I got my undergrad degree in sex education and queer community studies, which was self-designed. And then I took a 6-year break, during which I wrote my sex advice column every week and I taught sex education workshops. And then I went back to school to get my master's in marriage and family therapy so that I could be a practicing sex therapist. So all that kind of grew organically just out of being like someone raised as a girl in this world, not to be so dramatic, but.
No, totally. And like, I definitely resonate with that. I feel like a lot of the people who are like experts in the sexuality field, like have a sort of like similar like sexual coming of age story, like, oh, this was interesting to me and I couldn't find information, so therefore I sought the information, I became the resource, and then it's like, oh wait, I can actually make a career out of this and help people like have better sex so that they don't have to flounder in the dark like I did.
Totally. Yeah. And I also feel like sex education is not like a money-making scheme for most people. So like, you get into it because your heart is in it, or your brain is in it, or whatever. It's not like, oh, how do I want to make $1 million? Oh, I know, I'll do independent sex educating. That's not generally how it works. Sorry. No, you know,
yeah.
Not to like,
yeah.
Sometimes it works that way, but
yeah, so sometimes it's sexy and fun and money making, but yeah, I feel like it's also tough too, like in the society that we live in with all the restrictions. Like, I know I personally am very passionate about sex education and I'm wanting to create like holistic sex education for children, but mm-hmm. It's like, how do you do that in this world? Like, I know that's going to be something that's going to take decades. I might not even see the fruits of this labor like in this mm-hmm. lifetime, and mm-hmm. but it's like, it's still so important because it lays the foundations.
Yeah.
What led you to sort of write this book? I know you share a lot of like exercises and worksheets and stuff throughout the book. Was this inspired more from your own like personal experiences or through your work with your clients in your sex therapy practice?
I feel like it was a little bit of both. I think when I thought about structuring the book, I had been writing sex advice for over 10 years before I even started to work on the book. So writing about sex was always sort of like a no-brainer to me, where I was like, of course I'm going to write about sex. In terms of writing a book, people had told me that I should write a book for years, but like the process of writing a book is a big deal. And a lot of it is a lot of sort of like unpaid creative work, which like isn't always accessible to people. From start to finish, I worked on the book for about 4 years.
Wow.
So it's a big undertaking. And I feel like the content, like writing wise, it felt very easy to write the actual book. It was all the like, how do I structure the book that I got really caught in. I also started working on the book when I was pregnant with my kid. And so, you know, I had a baby and there was a lot going on. So I think that kind of slowed me down a little bit. But when I thought about structurally, what do I want this book to be for the reader? I really wanted people to feel like they had worked with me as a client for like 3 or 6 months by going through the book sequentially. So I kind of created the structure of the book to follow the wave that I might follow with clients. So the first part of the book is a lot about just like removing barriers to shame and kind of examining what context we all grow up in around how sex is talked about and how we learn about it, why it's so contradictory for a lot of us, and kind of like normalizing, like, yeah, like if you're confused about sex or you have your own contradicting messages about sex in your head, that's totally understandable. Like that's not on you. That's like a context issue. And then it kind of moves through, okay, like how do we apply this personally to you? Like, how does this really apply to you? Which I feel like is why I wanted to put all those worksheets in. Mm-hmm. And then after that, we kind of get into more like heady conversations about like desire discrepancies and like differentiation and sort of these like heavy hitting therapy topics and then troubleshooting. And that's essentially like, if you were to work with me for 6 months, that's like what we would be doing every week, session to session.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's great too, like the way, I know you said it was challenging to figure out how to organize it, but I think it's great the way that you did it, because it gives like sex therapy essentially more like accessibility to people who might not be able to like afford sex therapy or just like therapy in general. Like, I know that like mental health support and like relationship support is a luxury that not every people have access to. And like through reading the book, like I found that it was like very easily digestible for like the average person who maybe doesn't have like years of experience in like sex education. And like, yeah, it's just like really easy to understand and like follow along and go through that process. So good. Like, props.
Mission accomplished.
It's great. Yeah. No, so great. I was like, as I was reading it, I was like, oh, wow. Yes. Yes, 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 yes. Okay. I also thought it was interesting too, how throughout, which I wasn't expecting you to have so much like content around this, but like what caused you to sort of have CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, as like an overarching like theme for understanding throughout this book?
Mm. I feel like cognitive behavioral therapy is like, easy is the wrong word. It's kind of like a straightforward way to apply like a lot of the stuff that I was talking about in the first part of the book, which is cognition based, right? It's like, how do we learn about sex? How does this impact our beliefs about sex and ourselves, our thoughts about ourselves and our sex lives or sex in general? And how do we get these thoughts patterns? How do we challenge these thought patterns so that we can act differently or have a different experience in our sex lives? And for those who don't know, first of all, CBT also stands for cock and ball torture in the kink community.
Yes.
And so as
as
a sex therapist, we all like to have a lot of hearty har hars about the abbreviation CBT. But I am talking about cognitive behavioral therapy. So those who don't know what CBT is, it looks at, how do you think about something? How does that influence the way you feel about that thing? And how does that translate into your behavior about that thing? So when I'm thinking about challenging people's ideas of what sex is and what it could be for them, I want to know, how did you learn this belief about yourself or about sex? Is the experiences you've had that have impacted that belief, do they hold up today? Are they expired? Do you trust the sources where you got this information that influenced that belief? How do we challenge that belief? And how can that translate into having a sexual experience that's much different? So for example, a common belief I hear from clients is, I take too long to have an orgasm. Mostly these are clients that have vaginas, not penises. Though, of course, that can also happen in all kinds of anatomy. So the belief, I take too long to orgasm, we can challenge that in so many different cognitive ways, right? So it takes the average person with a clitoris 14 minutes of direct, consistent stimulation to have a climax. 14 minutes is a long time. If you set a timer for 14 minutes, you're going to get like a bunch of stuff done. Also, what does too long really mean, right? So like, where is this influence from? Like porn, for example, which I talk about in the book, I'm not inherently anti-porn by any means. I do think that a lot of mainstream porn portrays orgasms as happening through penetration only, which generally is not what most bodies respond to. It happens quickly and dramatically and excitingly because porn is entertainment. I don't want to sit here watching somebody use a vibrator for 14 full minutes before they climax. I want to cut to the good stuff so that I can get off.
Exactly. Yeah.
So like, we need to think about like, how did we learn that my personal orgasm is taking quote unquote too long? How did we learn that? Then we want to think about like, what is our partner's experience of our orgasm? So like, can my partner speak up if they are enjoying what we're doing, not enjoying what they're doing, need an adjustment? Do I trust that my partner will report that type of thing to me? Because a lot of the time people get in this trap where they're like, well, they've been going down on me for like 5 minutes and I haven't had an orgasm yet and they must be really bored, or like maybe their mouth hurts or whatever. It's like, okay, can you trust your partner to be like, hey, can we mix this up? Or like, hey, I could be down here all day, or like whatever. And do we trust that reporting? So there's like, that's just like a little tiny bit, right, of all this stuff that goes into this belief that I take too long. And then behaviorally, we end up like cutting our pleasure off prematurely because we're assuming we're taking too long and our partner is bored. We end up not asking for what we want. We end up feeling shame about how our bodies work and what our sexual experience is like. And we really box ourselves into this thing, which might not even be true or applicable at all.
Yeah.
That is my tirade.
No, I mean, that's totally right and totally resonates, because I feel like a lot of the times women, especially women and vulva owners, especially, although, yeah, including everyone, but historically feel left out of the pleasure equation because we're not taught that our pleasure matters. And a lot of the times, like what you see in mainstream porn or even in like romantic comedy, stuff like that, right? All the time, even basic sex education, we're taught that it's like penis and vagina penetration, and it ends when the penis owner comes. When in reality, it's like, it can take this long, beautiful journey. There doesn't have to be any penetration. It could just be oral. It can just be dry humping. It can be all sorts of beautiful things. And I feel like a lot of us don't feel like connected to pleasure because we're not taught that our pleasure matters. We're not given sort of like the permission to discover what we actually like and enjoy. And then we're afraid to actually communicate our needs to our partners. And I love that that also is like a theme throughout like this book, is like, okay, figuring out what are my needs, what are my desires. And like, really, I think the whole point of this book, at least what I found, was that pleasurable sex, you have to communicate in order to have pleasurable sex. And like, that really is the issue that most couples or like sexual partners are having, is that we're not communicating our needs. So of course our needs aren't getting met when we don't tell our partners what we want.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of the trap that a lot of people fall into, is that we have this entertainment based depiction of what pleasure is. And that's fine and good or whatever, but then we don't have anything to balance it out with. And so we're holding ourselves to this ideal that like, oh, pleasure is organic. It just happens. It doesn't involve any work or self-discovery or communication. It's just simultaneous. I mean, like, this might shock you, but I've had a lot of sex. And the amount of times that I have
shocker
had, that I have had simultaneous climax with a partner in under 10 minutes.
Rare.
I think maybe never. I don't know. Like, you know, like that's not like how it really works. And I think that like if we don't talk about it, we don't know that. And then we're just like, well, I'm broken. I'm messed up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing this wrong. And it's like, mm-hmm. well, yeah. And I think too, like when I think about the audience of the book, I feel like, and I think I say this in the intro somewhere, that the audience for my book already knows that like consent is a good idea. They might already know that like pleasure is something they deserve, but they don't know how to really integrate that stuff into their sex life in a way that really feels genuine and satisfying. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean like they don't know how to do it. I trust that my readers are very like capable people.
It's like the integration piece. It's the yeah. actually like embodying of that practice of totally. Doing it. Yeah.
And I say this to my clients all the time, like these negative messages that we've gotten about ourselves or our sex lives are a slow drip in. Right? They're coming at us from a lot of different places in a slow, methodic way. Some ways we don't even really cognitively know, like pay attention to or notice. And so it's going to be a slow drip out. And so a lot of this is going to be practice, practice, practice. And even myself as someone who is very grateful to be steeped in sex positivity all day, like I get to talk to people about sex and all the time. And I get to get a lot of real world examples of what is normal and what people think. And like, it's very validating to me as a sexual person as well, right? I get to bear witness to a lot of sexual issues, and that makes sexual issues feel normal. Not everybody mm-hmm. gets to do that. And still, I still show up to sex as a flawed human being with baggage and shame and thoughts and imperfections that I need to work through. Like, I'm not superhuman, you know, this is the human experience around sexuality is complicated and fascinating. And so I think for me, the book really wanted to look at that, like you're calling it like that integration piece or like a further exploration of like, what does sex really mean to me? And how does it show up for me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's so important too. Like I know through sort of my own like sexual discovery journey. Like I've always been super into sex. I've always been very sex positive, but it wasn't until like, what was it? I started having sex at like 14. I didn't have really enjoyable sex until I was 24 because I wasn't communicating what I wanted. I didn't know what I wanted. I was engaging in these situations because it was hot. It was fun. It was mostly like quickies. I like to be more dominant and like anonymous sex. But then I realized it's like, part of it is like creating that intimacy with partners, whether they're like a fuck buddy or a long-term relationship, but it's just like having that foundation of trust, being able to communicate what you want. And also like, in a way, I think you phrase in there, like asking is different than demanding it too. Mm-hmm. And so for me, what I learned in my own sexual journey is that like I needed oral. That was a non-negotiable. That for 10 years of having sex, I didn't ask for it because I didn't realize that's something that I needed. And then once I made that decision, I started calling in better sexual experiences, better partners who actually cared about my pleasure instead of just getting off. So like, to me, that was really key in like, sort of having these, I don't know, like, awareness about my own beliefs about sex and about like oral, for example, too, because a lot of the times we have these beliefs and we don't necessarily know where they come from. Mm-hmm. Like they're so deeply ingrained by like societal conditioning, what we see in the media, even like how we're raised through our family. And like, I had this belief that like oral was bad and that like my pussy was gross and like, mm-hmm. why would anyone want to spend time down there? And it's just like crazy to think when I actually was deconditioning those beliefs, I was like, none of that's true.
Right.
None of that's true. And now I have partners who will go down on me for 3 hours and I have 30 orgasms. So
that's a pretty good ratio.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. But I mean, it's so interesting to think of like how these belief systems really can like progress throughout our lives. And like through my coaching, I was going through a neuro-linguistic programming, like NLP certification. And it's interesting to see that like some of these beliefs like might not even be ours at all. Like it can be passed down through generations. And so when we're looking at our beliefs, specifically like our beliefs about sex, it's like we can look at, okay, like how did our family members, right? The people who raised us, what are their beliefs about sex? Mm-hmm. And then how are those beliefs influencing how you think about sex and how you act in a sexual experience?
Totally. I mean, I have a 3-year-old kid and it's been really interesting thinking about that type of thing, right? Like, what am I passing down to him? How do I want to fold in my work and my values and my beliefs about sex and sexuality in my parenting? And how do I do that in an age appropriate way? Mm-hmm. And so like, you know, the first thing we started with was really making sure that we're using accurate language for anatomy. One of his like first 20 words was vulva because it was applicable, because I got, mm-hmm. I don't want to get into this whole story, but I got a little bit of a little vulvar injury.
Oh no.
And I was home alone with him a lot when my partner was at work, and I had to like ice and like do sitz baths and like things like that. And so he would ask, my kid would be like, what do you do? You know, he was showing concern. He's like, what's up? And I was like, it's okay. I have a boo-boo on my vulva. And so like, he thought that I had, that my vulva was called a boo-boo.
Oh.
And I was like, no. No son of mine can grow up thinking that this is what this is. And I really just wanted to be totally normal. And like, it's just a body part, you know? And mm-hmm. so like, that was really important to me. I also feel like thinking about, I posted about this on my social media recently, which was like certain friends of mine, which again, those friends are socially conditioned to do this. If they're talking about sex in my house and my son is home, they'll spell it, or they'll whisper it, or they'll drop their voices. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you can say the word sex around him. Like, we mm-hmm. don't need to talk about sex in this like nitty gritty detail about like all the freaky ass stuff we're doing, because he's too little to understand that part or place it correctly. Mm-hmm. But the word sex cannot be something that we are putting like subconscious shame around by not saying the mm-hmm. word around him. Like, that he's going to get so many messages about shame and sex from the outside world. He doesn't need to do it in here. And like, again, parenting, I'm always sort of hesitant to talk about parenting because it is so personal. People, I'm sure, as you know, get all up in arms about children and sexuality. But I think like, if you're just doing things in an age appropriate way at your unique child's pace, then like, great. And also, talking to your kid about sex is a way to communicate your personal family values to your child. And that can be anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. I'm not a parent yet, but I do have a little brother who's 8. And like, I've been practicing having those conversations with him, like obviously with consent of like my parents, but like he'll come to me and ask like, okay, what is it when a man marries a man or a woman? Like, we've talked about like trans people, we've talked about gay people, we've talked about sex, because he genuinely asks. And like, it's at least my perspective. Again, I'm not a parent yet, but it's like with the age appropriate, it's like answer the question in a way that they can understand, but like, right. Don't give like too much detail, right? Yep. He won't always remember. He'll ask the same question again, maybe like a month later, or like, where did babies come from? Or what's like, I talked to him about my period. Oh, I'm on my period right now. And he's like, oh, what does that mean? I'm like, okay, let's go through it.
Well, that's my question. So I also had the period conversation with my toddler recently. I use Luna pads. And so I like, I'm like rinsing them out and like changing them out. And it's like red, you know, he's like, what's up? And I'm like, oh, it's just my period. And he's like, period. And I'm like, yep. And he's like, what's that? And in my head, I was like, okay, how do I explain a period in 3-year-old language? So I was like, like, it's like every month I have to shed my uterine lining. And he goes, uterine lining? And I was like, yeah. I'm like, you know what? You have a penis, so you're not going to get a period, just so you know. And he goes, I have a penis. I don't have a period. And I was like, there you go. Good start. We can do the rest when you're older.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think I forget if this was like a meme or something I saw on social media, maybe even like a couple of years ago, but it was even not necessarily around like sex, but around like, even like communicating with children, like age appropriate, but it was about like, even like nutrition, right? Like, why you eat certain foods, like why would you eat a blueberry, right? To explain that to a 2-year-old, it's like, oh, because it's good for you and it helps with this, versus like when it's like a 10-year-old, be like, okay, this has antioxidants, it's really good for this, this, and this. Like, so it's like we sort of like build on that language in a way that they can understand. And I think I want to like circle back a little bit more to like the shame and like how a lot of the times I feel like shame can start at such a young age. Like, I don't know if this is something that you've seen like within your clients or the people that you've supported, but I found that like a lot of the times, like kids start to experiment with masturbation, not consciously knowing what it is between like ages like 3 and 7 or so. But a lot of the times we are shamed by our caretakers because it's wrong. It's sexual. So I guess like, where have you seen or have you seen a correlation with people who have really overpowering like shame belief systems that have started from like that young in childhood, or have you seen it's more like developed more over time with societal conditioning and whatnot?
I mean, I definitely think it's both. I think that for a lot of children, their caregivers are holding the structure of the whole world for them, which is like no pressure. So I think like when you're holding that structure, how you approach those very early experiences really makes an impact for people. And when I talk to my clients about, you know, what was your sexual education history sort of like, you know, like, do you remember the first time you like experimented with any sort of sexuality? Like, what kind of messages did you get from home? Like, what was the communication like with your parents about dating? That's all really important context information. And I think that as you grow up, you sort of have experiences to either support or not deny, support or challenge these kind of core experiences that you've had. So like maybe you got the information early on that masturbating was not okay. You could grow up to have experiences that confirm that, or you can grow up to have experiences to be like, oh, actually, you know what? Like this is okay. Like this was actually built on my parents doing what my parents thought was best and based on my parents' beliefs. And maybe that isn't necessarily what my beliefs are. And of course, these messages and these experiences aren't always like parent to child. They can come from all kinds of directions. But I think when you're thinking about like sexuality development throughout a person's entire lifetime, a 3-year-old isn't touching their body because they're like, this is sexual.
They're just like, oh, this feels good. What is the sensation? Like, cool.
It's like the same reason why babies put their feet in their mouths. They don't have a foot fetish. They're just like, what's this like? This feels funny. Like, it's not about sexuality. Adults project sexuality onto children in those formats. And so, like, if you can just be like, oh, hey, like, I don't, you know what? Honestly, though, when my kid like touches his own body, like I'm not over here like commenting on it. I'm just like,
yeah,
the same way I wouldn't comment on him like holding his arm. I'm not going to be like, I see you're holding your arm. Like, whatever, it's his arm. Like, I think at some point children get old enough where it's really what is appropriate is teaching them the difference between public displays of this and private displays of this, and where mm-hmm. it's okay to be by yourself with your own body. It doesn't have to have anything to do with sexuality. When they're mm-hmm. old enough for sexuality to make sense, they will remember these imprinting experiences where they know that inherently they are okay. They don't have to have shame about this. They know what a boundary looks like. And that's the point. It's like, how do you teach your kid how to maintain boundaries around this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that brought up a good point too, because like that's something that I've been seeing too with like, you know, teaching about context, whether it's adults or like children. Like with my little brother, for example, like I really enjoy being naked, but I don't do it in front of the family. When I'm at home visiting, I'm in my bedroom, I lock the door. It's a private time moment. Mm-hmm. He has been inspired to, he calls it naked sleep, which is great. But he's also naked sleep with my parents. And my dad's like, Jack, you can be naked if you want, but not in my bed because I don't want your butt in my face. Uh-huh. And it's like, okay, so like, it's like understanding the context, like, okay, like, yes, nudity is okay. It's okay to be comfortable in your body, celebrate it. But like, there's a time and a place to do that. And I think that, I feel like that also like correlates with, you know, us in like adult relationships, or even like context of situations, even with like desires and fantasies and whatnot. Like context is so important. And that's something a lot of the times we don't realize that we might like something in one situation, but if the situation's completely different, maybe it doesn't resonate anymore at all. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think those are the messages that you're sending ultimately, right? And to me, you know, assuming my kid remains being a boy, who knows, but like, if he is going to be a dude in the world, I want him to understand that like, you can't always do what you want, right? So like, mm-hmm. an example is like, he loves to swim naked. We swim naked at the river down by our house, but we've also been to a few lifeguarded beaches this summer where the rule is he has to wear a bathing suit. And he's really upset about that. And I'm like, listen, I don't actually agree with this rule personally as your parent. However, this is the rule. We are going with the majority of what people are comfortable with here in this public space. This is the rule according to the people that are in charge of this space. And this is the deal. So if you want to go swimming, you have to put on your bathing suit. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't get to just like do whatever you want, man. Like, you have to learn how to hear no. There's a mm-hmm. whole chapter about hearing no in the book, by the way.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, no son of mine is going to be all entitled about what mm-hmm. he wants to do. If we're at home and he wants to be naked in the comfort of our own home by himself, or, you know, with adult appropriate supervision of myself, but that's fine. But like, sorry, man, you got to put clothes on to go to school. And he's like, mm-hmm. why? And I'm like, this is the way the world operates. Your body for everybody to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, so important. Is there anything else you'd like to share, and how can people connect with you and purchase the book?
If you pick up the book and you only have time to read one chapter, chapter 6, it's all the yes, no, maybe list. And it's about discovering what you want. And I feel like this is like a really, really practical part of the book that looks at like, what do you want? What do you not want? What do you maybe want? And mm-hmm. if you can use that worksheet to spark a conversation with your partner or even just yourself, I feel like that is a very helpful resource. And it's something that I assign to my clients a lot. Obviously, I want everybody to read all the book, but if that was just the one piece you read, I think it would give you a lot.
Yeah, 100%. I do find that completing a yes, no, maybe list, whether you're single or partnered, is so invaluable because it helps allow us to like visually look at certain things that we might not have even considered mm-hmm. as it relates to sex, and help us be more sort of like tangible with our boundaries. And, you know, we can bring context in it too. Like, oh yes, I'm into fisting in this situation or like no choking hard rule. Like that, mm-hmm. that's, I think, one of the few things that I'm like, nah, like I want to be able to breathe. Thank you. but I think it's so important to be able to like visually see, okay, yes, I'm into this. No, I'm not into this. Maybe depending on the context, or like if my partner's into it, sure, I'll explore. Because like having that foundation of knowing what we like makes it easier to have that conversation with our partners, instead of just being, I know, like when finding new partners, you're always like, well, what are you into? And it's like, how do you have that conversation? Like, totally. This is a great way to start.
Well, and I also feel like a lot of my clients, again, thinking about the audience for this book, they might know like, yeah, I want to have the sex that I want to have. I want to have sex that feels good to me. And I get a lot of clients that feel distress around like, I don't know what I want. Like, how do I figure that out? Mm-hmm. And I feel like a yes, no, maybe list is kind of nice, because it just gives you all these options where you're like, am I into this? Am I not into this? Like, what do I think about this? And I've done yes, no, maybe lists before, like a few different times. And I learned something new about myself every time, because my sexuality and what I'm into is also evolving. And mm-hmm. so I think like also some good ways would be like to watch some porn that is really interesting to you, or read erotica, or even just like talk to your friends more about sex. I feel like hearing examples of other people's sexuality is inspiring and creative, just like it's inspiring and creative to hear about what people are doing in the rest of their lives. Like, I don't think your sex life has to be this like removed piece of your life. It's an integrated part of your life. Mm-hmm. And I think if we're able to treat it like that more and more and more, we'll see that we can pull skills from the rest of our life and apply it to our sex life and just be like happier, more whole human beings.
100%. Yeah. I'm a huge supporter of like using pop culture, media, smut, porn, whatever, to help us figure out what it is we like and don't like. And I'm a huge supporter of like watching porn with your partner too, because it's like, I think it's great to build intimacy so that you can visually see like what they like and what mm-hmm. they don't, and how they please themselves. Because I think one of the most vulnerable, intimate things.
I was going to say, I feel like something that's a little ironic about myself is I actually really do not like watching porn with anybody. I just want to do it by myself. Like, I've had partners be like send me a clip. Like, I like it when my partners send me clips of the porn they've been watching, but I want to watch it alone. Or they'll be like, send me a clip of what you were watching. And I'm like, no. Like, it's like where I get like very bashful. Like, I'm like, oh God, like anything but that. But I'm like, oh, but I'll talk about all of this stuff all day long to all of these people I don't know. But in my personal life, like you're saying, it's so vulnerable. I'm like, no, get out of my psyche. This is just like where my brain goes.
Yeah. And I think that's important to know too, for anyone, like whatever your boundaries are around like porn or not or whatever, like that's totally okay. I'm more exhibitionist in nature. So that's probably also why I enjoy. I'm like, let's put on a show. Like, let me tie you up while we watch porn, while I masturbate, while you can't touch me and you can only look at me. I'm like, it's yes, I like that dynamic. It's the Gemini. It really is.
Mine is
I have a Leo Aquarius Mars. See, my Aquarius rising. So nice. I have the aqua. Yeah. But yeah, the Leo Mars and Taurus Venus is like the sensuality. Oh, and then like, that's why I'm dominant in the bedroom. But anyways, my sex
life. Tell me about my star sign sexual alignment.
is there anything else you'd like to share, and how can people check you out and purchase the book?
Yeah. So the book, in our recording timeline, the book just came out yesterday.
Woohoo!
So I am like still processing that reality. A lot of people have already gotten their books. I'm like really excited and nervous to hear how the reception goes. Yeah, it's been great. So you can get the book officially anywhere you buy books. You can get it on my website, yanatalenhicks.com. You can get it through my Instagram, which is at @the_vspot, V like vagina. I have a TikTok. I don't really use it at all because I'm 36.
I will put you on a TikTok because I love TikTok.
Okay. So I will I'll share your TikTok on my Instagram. Okay. And what else? Oh, the book is called Hot and Unbothered, How to Think About, Talk About, and Have the Sex You Really Want. It's very true to its subtitle. Yeah, please do buy it. Buy it for me. Buy it for a friend. Buy it for yourself. There's an audiobook also.
Yeah, I did see that. I was like, damn, this is dense. Should I just buy the audiobook? And I was like, 10 hours? Nah, I'm going to speed read this. I was highlighting till 3 a.m. last night. I'm like, okay.
A big book, but it's fully illustrated and there's a lot of worksheets. So I feel like it's not just walls and walls of text. So don't be scared.
No, I feel like it's probably at least 100 pages of worksheets. Mm-hmm. At least.
Well, part of that was like my own ditz moment was that I wrote the whole book in Google Docs. And, you know, I had been looking at books that I was like, okay, I have never written a book before. So I was like, what's the size of a book? And so I looked at like a book that I felt like was reasonable. And it was like 250 pages. And I was like, great. Yeah, 250. So I wrote 250 pages on an 8x11 Google Doc. A book is not 8x11. And my editor was like, okay, cool. So your book is like real big. And I was like, oh shit, I didn't even think about this. So we like
fat, juicy pussy.
I know. So we like did a little bit of cutting, a little bit of editing, but it's still, you know, it's legit.
She thick.
It's 400 pages. Mm-hmm. But you know what? I gave it my all. I've got nothing left.
You should be proud. It's a great book. I think it's great that you have the resources built into it too. Cause I know when I was going through like Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski. Yeah.
Emily Nagoski. I always say Nagoski, but now I feel like maybe it's Nagoski.
I think it's Nagoski.
She blurbs my book.
Yeah. I saw that. I was like, okay, legit. Let's go.
No, she's extremely legit.
Yeah. No, because I know with her book, she had some examples and then like, I actually bought like the separate workbook mm-hmm. to like go through stuff. And I thought it was like interesting and also like good choice to also add to the accessibility of your book is like putting all of the resources right there so that no one, like people don't have to go get anything else extra. It's like everything mm-hmm. you need is just right in there and you could go through the whole process yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also think that in terms of, I wish I had this book as a teenager for sure. I also feel like this book, and I'm grateful to myself for putting this all together because as a therapist or as a coach, there's such good homework resources in there for clients, you know, where it's like, if you need to break down how CBT applies to their sexual thinking, it's like, boom, it's right there. And I'm mm-hmm. like, stoked to be like, okay, so on page blah blah blah, let's do this.
Yeah, here's my book, right? Required reading for every single client.
And like next week we'll talk about this or whatever.
Yeah No, that's so great. Amazing. I guess as we wrap, like, if there was one piece of advice that you shared within this book, what would you want people to know? Like, what do you think is the most important message that you wrote about in this book?
I think, well, most important. I don't know if it's most important, but I think like if I had to sum up a takeaway from the book that I really want people to hear, it's that talking about your sex life outside of your actual sexual interactions can just do wonders for your actual sex life, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
100%.
You know, like, yeah. Please talk about it. Please mm-hmm. stop leaving it up to accidents or like mm-hmm. coincidences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. And to piggyback off that too, it's like have those conversations at like a neutral, non-triggering setting and time to where no one's initiating so that you can be more candid and not feel that fear of like rejection in the moment if mm-hmm. like it's in a situation where you're trying to have sex and your partner's like, no.
Yes. Well, and also like build resilience to rejection, which you can do in the book.
100%. 100%. So good. Well, thank you so much for coming on. It's been such a pleasure. I loved reading this book. I'm so excited to share it with everyone. And yeah, amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
You can check out the direct link in the show notes below for you to purchase your copy of Hot and Unbothered by Yana Talon Hicks. And if you're wanting additional support in really cultivating the sex life of your dreams, join me in the workshop, The Best of Your Life, on September 22nd at 8 p.m. CST. If you use code YOURPLEASUREPATH, you get 15% off this workshop. It's a live 2-hour workshop where we're going all deep into understanding relationship dynamics, intro to BDSM and kink, and really diving deep into understanding your fantasies, your desires, and most importantly, how to communicate them to your partner. As always, you can follow us on social media at I Am Catherine Drysdale on TikTok and Instagram, as well as the podcast page, Your Pleasure Path. And for details on upcoming offers and the next podcast episodes, visit yourpleasurepath.com/podcast. See you next time.